Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Update your home with Palmero Vinyl Plank Flooring. It provides a genuine, weathered wood look that complements any decor and clicks together for easy installation. It's waterproof, scratch and dent resistant, making it perfect for active households. Save big money on our wide variety of flooring options at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, we'll talk about some news in the world of Houston restaurants, as well as our meals at a couple of Houston restaurants you may want to try. To do that, I'm joined by my co-host this week. She is a freelance food writer who contributes to Culture Map and other outlets. Brianna McClain, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks for being here. Let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, State Fair has announced that its original location in the Gateway Memorial Development has closed. The location in the Woodlands remains open. Its owner, Culinary Concepts, has said that State Fair isn't dead. It is more evolving. They want to reopen the restaurant in a new location. And they are describing this revised concept as a, quote, social dining destination, end quote, with a, quote, more relevant menu, end quote. Brianna, I don't suppose State Fair was a restaurant that you, I know you're relatively a newcomer to town. I don't know if you ever made it over there.
No, unfortunately not.
You know, this is a strange restaurant for me because I have such fond memories of the very first version of State Fair, like when it opened in 2016 and then kind of 2017-18 when it was under the control of Cherry Pie Hospitality, which was the restaurant group operated by the late Lee Ellis and then also the chef Jim Mills, who has gone on to, well, he was at the Houstonian for a long time. And then since Cherry Pie folded, he went on to, he's actually working for Buc-ee's. Like, you know, it's like, what do you do as you're, when you're a chef, like in semi-retirement? Oh, you just make sure that the brisket sandwiches keep flowing to Buc-ee's. You know, Jim's a super talented guy who's completely overqualified for that role. But State Fair was really like kind of a stunning place when it opened. It was this big, you know, wide open, bright, you know, red, white, and blue kind of decor, you know, in Gateway. It replaced this kind of sports bar thing that didn't last, that wasn't well executed, frankly. And it was just stunning, like how just like raw horsepower delicious it was in those early days. Like the chicken fried steak was excellent. You know, Jim has a real like appreciation for Texas culinary tradition. So, you know, he had a very specific philosophy about the chili, like true Texas red, no tomatoes, no beans.
Nice.
You know, just in the spice mix and the way it was made and everything was from scratch. The burgers, the salads, the fish, like everything was good there. And the brunch, the pancakes especially, you know, all of that stuff. And so, you know, even though I am a dedicated interlooper, you know, my friends and I, you know, people like Michael Fulmer, who is a regular participant in this podcast, we were driving out to Memorial, I don't know, once a month, like every 6 weeks or so for like the better part of a year.
Yeah.
To go to State Fair for this, like this really decadent, like Texas comfort food, you know, all the dips, like the, you know, pickle dip, you know, just like stupid stuff. But it was so delicious. And it won Best New Restaurant in the Tastemaker Awards in 2017, which of course is a reader vote, an online vote. But I think Lee Ellis was nothing if not a master. Among his many other talents, he took these kind of online, you know, votes very seriously and like really motivated people to participate. And so, of course, they won. But it was well earned. I mean, and it was the kind of place that maybe like, you know, was never going to show up on like it was never going to show up like in the Michelin Guide or like on some publications list of the best restaurants in Houston, but the way that they did everything, the attention to detail and the execution was so good that we really loved it. And Culinary Concepts took over in 2018. Cherry Pie fell apart for a myriad of reasons that are too, it could be its own like podcast series, yeah. The rise and fall of Cherry Pie Hospitality. but we're not doing that today, but, and it waned, you know, they opened a Sugarland location. Now they're in the Woodlands. It just wasn't the same without, like, frankly, the very obsessive personality of Lee Ellis to like ride over it and keep it really focused. And so I'm not terribly surprised that after 10 years that Culinary Concepts kind of pulled the plug on this. You know, they closed the Sugarland location earlier this year. The Woodlands location remains open, but mm-hmm. So I can't speak to this final iteration of State Fair and Memorial, but man, do I have some really great memories of those first couple of years when it just felt like we were there all the time.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I'm always on the hunt for good pancakes. I think we've had this discussion where like at brunch, I went pancakes. And so now I'm really sad that I never got to try those. But I am trying to determine what social dining destination means. So that's kind of my hesitation with this news.
Oh, goodness. See, I was really hoping that you knew what a social dining destination was and could explain it to me. Because typically when we talk about, you know, social dining, it sounds a little like vibe dining. It sounds
yeah.
like, you know, in my head, I'm thinking community tables. I'm thinking
I was gonna say community
shareable
tables.
Menus, oof. You know, like lots of shareable yeah. appetizers or even entrees. And I think in some ways it's kind of like taking what had been like a really family-friendly, you know, accessible restaurant and taking it probably more upscale and certainly more adult.
Yes.
And I just don't know, like, are they going to turn it into more of a sports bar? Are they going to like, you know, and the other thing is they say it's going to be 15,000 square feet, which is
wow,
very large. I mean,
yeah.
you know, that's like Steak 48 is like roughly 15,000 square feet. So this is not going to be a small restaurant, and they haven't said where it's going to be. So wherever it's going to be, it's going to be significant. And I don't know what more relevant menu means either. That's
caviar.
You know, that sounds like the chicken fried steak is not staying.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That makes me think that like
it sounds very
oh God, hamachi
yeah.
crudo and
yep.
you know sliders and all the things that we sort of joke about as being trendy right now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, that's kind of how I read that as well. Is it sounds like it's going to be very trendy. It sounds like they want it to be more kind of social dining to me. Sounds like it could either be community tables like we're talking about, which is kind of my idea of hell. But it could also be, you know, more of like a cocktail scene where they, you know, want to bring in. And so they're saying social as in we want to bring in the older crowd to like mingle and maybe, you know, flirt with each other. And
right. Like in a the well-executed version of a social dining destination, I would say is like Melrose, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like yeah. a cocktail bar with enough food to kind of entice you, like you could make it you wouldn't necessarily consider it dinner, but you could like sustain part of a night by grazing your way through that menu.
Yeah.
I would say that's the well done version of that.
Well, I mean, maybe they'll have, I don't know, like a carousel in there. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Or, I don't know, like Papa Shot or Ski Ball. Is that?
Yeah. Oh God. I love Ski Ball.
I do love Ski Ball.
Yes.
All right. Let's move on to topic number two. The Rice Box, the Houston's self-described Chinese takeout bar from the future, mm-hmm. is opening its next location in Clear Lake. You know, every time that John Peterson, the owner of the Rice Box, opens a new location, there's always some twist, right? There's always something new.
Mm-hmm.
For Clear Lake, this is their first location outside the Beltway. And so they're really leaning into the, you know, curbside pickup aspect of this with what they're calling pickup reactors. And the goal is to get you in and out in like 90 seconds, which, you know, I think in any context for a restaurant that's primarily focused on takeout and delivery, I think that's all to the good.
Yeah.
And of course, it looks like their locations, which obviously leans into that whole like sci-fi Blade Runner aesthetic. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, you're a busy mom. You appreciate 90-second pickup, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, we actually are devote Rice Box over here at my house. My 6-year-old especially loves it. So we had it just the other night for his birthday. And I know some people are like, oh, it's, you know, not authentic, blah, blah, blah. But it's nice. It's easy. It's consistent. And what I have noticed is whenever we do schedule pickup, you know, this is a pet peeve of mine, but I'm not harping on that right now, is, you know, you schedule it and you're like, I'll pick it up at 6:30. And then they text you and they're like 5 seconds later and they're like, it's ready. And you're like, but I don't get off work. And so now right. I have to go pick up Chinese. So, I mean, I think they'll be able to deliver on that offer of a fast, you know, 90 whatever, very quickly. And I think it is a good fit for Clear Lake because, you know, it's more family focused. And I'm kind of excited to see what the design will look like because I really do love the futuristic Blade Runner feel that they have for their different locations.
Yeah. You know, I will say authenticity is much less important to me than deliciousness when it comes to my American, especially my American style Chinese food. But I will say there's a lot of integrity in the way that the rice box creates these dishes. You know, John has lived in China. He speaks Chinese. His wife, Jenny, is Chinese. Like, they take a lot of care in how this stuff is done. And in fact, I had lunch with John a few weeks ago when we sort of first talked about this new location, and they've tweaked their dumplings. You know, it's been hard to get, it's been hard for them to execute it. But now they have new dumpling wrappers. They have new fillings, mm-hmm. veggie pork or chicken.
That. Yep.
and steamed or fried. And there are, it's interesting, I think, also because they do, I love it for the General Tso's. I love it for the beef with broccoli. I love mm-hmm. it for the sesame chicken.
But ooh, have you had the orange peel beef? That's actually the
I have.
One.
That yes. is also, that. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I sort of spread my rice box dollars around between like those four entrees.
Yeah.
But there are more traditional Chinese dishes on that menu. There are chow fun noodles. There's all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting, like, you know, because it started as a food truck. And primarily, they just did the General Tso's. And the more that they've evolved, you know, this is a 10-year process. It keeps getting a little better. And I really like that about the rice box and John and Jenny's commitment to, like, keep innovating and keep rolling out new menu items and keep tweaking, especially as they go into this new market where, you know, the one thing about, like, Montrose or River Oaks or Heights or whatever is that the people who are buying from them probably, for the most part, met them at the food truck back in the day. Mm-hmm. If you live in Clear Lake, you never went to the food truck because the food truck was across the street from Poison Girl on Westheimer in the middle of Montrose. That is not your scene. So they're coming into this new neighborhood and they've got to, you know, they're with some acclaim, right? Like some reputation.
Yeah.
And they've got to kind of put up or shut up. Mm-hmm. So I like that about this for them. And I've been in touch with a couple of my friends down there. They're very excited.
No, I think it's great. Like I said, especially for families, because it is so quick. And I do love how fast I know that the food will get out. It's not one of those where it's going to be, you know, you have to wait around a long time. So, I mean, 90 seconds, I would love it if they would bring this to the Heights as well, which I think would be a great, great place to do it. Though their location there is not nearly big enough. But we actually had this conversation, Eric, remember, about takeout or delivery food. That's what cuisine is best. And we all decided on Chinese. So
yeah, this was in a group text. This was a private conversation.
Yes.
Yes, I agree with you. Chinese and pizza are kind of my New York style pizza, not Neapolitan pizza, but with the range of all the things that we can get delivered,
mm-hmm.
still Chinese food rules.
It holds up. Yep. Yeah. It holds up. Yeah, for sure.
All right. Let's do topic number three. Euro Hut, a locally owned halal platter restaurant, has claimed three former locations of Halal Guys. That is to say the first Halal Guys near where Shepherd and Greenbrier split apart, like near the new Pinkerton's Barbecue, near Star Pizza. One in the medical center on Main Street, and then one up in Garden Oaks near you on Ella Boulevard. It is not entirely clear why Masroor Fatani, the Halal Guys franchisee, has walked away from these three locations. I reached out to Masroor, who, you know, I've known for a long time, and mm-hmm. he basically was polite but said, I can't talk about it.
Yeah.
But I will note that he also had a lease on a Halal Guys downtown that he has converted into Lane's Chicken Fingers, where he is also the Houston area franchisee. So it seems like maybe that Masroor is leaning into Lane's, which is growing at a rapid pace, and maybe what he's decided is his economic future. I don't want to get too lost in this, but do you have any thoughts on the three Halal Guys becoming Euro Hut?
You know, like you said, the Ella One is in my neighborhood. So I was very excited when I first moved here and saw that it was there, because I had been living in Idaho where there's not a lot of options. So, but I noticed that it was never very busy, which was surprising, because that street sees a lot of traffic. So I really think that this makes more sense, because one thing that I have also noticed about Houston is that we tend to really love our locally owned spots. So it'll be interesting to see if traffic picks up with this switch to Eurohood, especially on Ella. I'll let you know. I'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah, I'm eager to try Eurohood. I have to admit, this has not been a priority for me, although I will say that when Bastinani wrote a list of the 25 best halal restaurants in Houston for Culture Map a couple of years ago, he did include Eurohood, and Abbas took that article very seriously. He worked on it for like 6 months before he submitted it. So that's your celebrity endorsement. I am curious to try this. And, you know, again, not to be the old guy who's like reminiscing about Houston food history, but mm-hmm. when Halal Guys first opened, it was such a phenomenon. It had this huge reputation, obviously, from New York City. I mean, there was a line down the street. Like, they had to hire cops to manage the traffic for like the first 2 or 3 weeks. And obviously that faded, and it became like a late night craving. It became like everybody's favorite Uber Eats order, whatever. So yes, I think you're right. I think the bloom is off that particular rose. Mm-hmm. There is more local competition, Eurohood and other restaurants. And so, yes, I am curious. I will go to Eurohood. I will get a chicken and Euro mixed platter.
Absolutely.
With white sauce and red sauce, and stir it all together and, mm-hmm. you know, decide whether it matches my memories of Halal Guys. But, you know, this is affordable. It's relatively healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I found out that this was happening, because a reader like drove past the Halal Guys on Farnham and saw that the sign had changed and was deeply hurt, because he'd been going, like, that had been his like go-to, you know, cheap lunch craving for years, and yeah. he was very upset. So yeah. I think he'll be okay with Eurohood. He should definitely give Eurohood a try.
Yeah.
I will give Eurohood a try, and then we'll report back.
Absolutely. I will too.
All right. Brianna, I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around. Brianna, for our restaurants of the week, I want to talk to you about two places. Let's start with 1111. This is the new Mexico City-inspired cocktail bar in Montrose from Melrose owners Army Sadehi and Brandon Douliakis. Like Melrose, they have enlisted Totemo chef Emmanuel Chavez to do the menu. Interestingly, I think this is whereas Melrose has a menu that's like a burger and crispy tuna and, you know, kind of shareable snacky stuff, this menu is much more explicitly Mexican. There's a couple of tacos on the menu. There's guacamole. There's ceviche. There's empanadas. And there's that whole fish in the style of Contramar, the very famous Mexico City restaurant, where half is in a green salsa and half is in a red sauce. Brianna, I want to talk about the food and I want to talk about the drinks, but just start with the design. Like, what were your first impressions as you walked into 1111 for the first time?
You know, what's interesting is I actually went to both places when it was light outside, and I feel like it would really have a better vibe at night. Just with, you know, the entrance is kind of around the corner from Doc's, so it feels a little bit awkward when you're pulling up and getting in and out right there off such a busy street. But, you know, I think there's been a lot of attention to the design. It's very sexy. I love that little VIP section that they have that looks almost cave-like. I'm hoping to be able to sit there one day. And I have to say, too, that the seats are very comfortable. And you and I have talked about this. Seating is incredibly important to me. But it is interesting that some of the tables are rather small. I feel like those are more for when people want to gather just for drinks and maybe one bite. But also maybe people don't order as much as we do when they go out to eat. Probably not.
Right. I will say it is possible to have like a multi-course dinner at 1111, and that's mm-hmm. what we did, and that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
I don't generally think that is the plan for most people. I think most people are going to get a guacamole or an order of empanadas or a couple of tacos and kind of graze on them over the course, like to pair with their drinks, not as dinner. But, you know, I'm with you. I mean, it does, you know, they worked with Nina McGaughan, the local designer. She did Kakoti. She does a whole bunch of high-end residential stuff. She's a very accomplished designer. And in fact, our friend Emily Cotton will have an article about the design of 1111 in Culture Map in the coming week or two. But there's all this plant life. As you said, it's kind of cave-like. There's a lot. It's eye-catching. It doesn't look like any other bar in Houston that I've been to or that I can think
That's
of.
That's true. Yeah.
And you know, looking at pictures of bars in Mexico City, it's like, okay, like this is consistent with that aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this off and on the show recently because, you know, Mexico City is one of the truly great bar cultures in the world, you know, certainly in like in the Western Hemisphere, New York, Mexico City, Lima, maybe like in some order are the best cities for eating and drinking. And given how close it is to Houston, I'm not surprised that it's influencing our dining scene more and more. So, you know, all of that makes sense to me. And as you said, it's very comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, I went there with you guys, with you and Emily, and we were there for 2 or 3 hours last week. And I had been a couple of weeks before where I kind of closed the place down and was there for another 2 or 3 hours. And I like that it has that, it's got a good energy to it. The staff is super friendly. I mean, obviously they know who I am and what I do for a living. And so they are on their best behavior, but watching their interactions with the other tables, I think they understand that it's a special place. Mm-hmm. And I think they know that people are there like with a sense of occasion. And so, you know, they want to be part of that for people. And I think that speaks really well of the kind of the style of hospitality that they're aiming to provide at 1111.
Yeah. And I think too, like you were saying about the staff, I think that they have their uniforms, you know, the hostess are wearing those, you know, beautiful green dresses. And so I think that lends an element of, you know, it just elevates the experience. And I think it also probably helps the staff to feel like they are part of something much more special, which is that rubs off on the patrons. So it's really nice to experience. And I would also say I am no longer single, but when I was single, I would have absolutely gone here with friends to scope out and find any, you know, other singles in my area, because you really can sit kind of in any corner almost of this place and get a good view of, you know, the bar and the different seating areas. So, you know, going out here, I'd like to experience that late night effect one day with friends where, you know, with the DJ and everybody just kind of being really flirty and chatty, see what it's like.
Right. Just to sort of emphasize that point, you know, mm-hmm. when I went the first time, I was mm-hmm. with a friend of mine and we had dinner across the street at Maitre D, and then we walked over to 1111 and we were having drinks. And, you know, we saw a couple of people that we knew that were there with other people, and they like sat with us for a little while and then they moved on.
Yeah.
Someone else we knew came over and sat with us. Mm-hmm. And it has that kind of,
it's a social dining experience.
It's a social dining experience done well. And it's very conducive to like, oh, this is my friend's going to sit with it. This is someone new you could meet and talk to you and dance with. I like that about it.
Absolutely. I agree.
All right, let's talk about the food. We fired the entire menu. What were maybe one of your one or two favorite things that we ate?
You know, I really, that ribeye taco, the melty cheese, the queso crisp, as they call it, is something that I can absolutely see myself going back and getting over and over again. There's the whole sea bass, which we must discuss, the rojo y verde. But also I really enjoyed the wings, which I'm not incredibly like a huge wings person, but they were really, really good.
Yeah. I we'll talk about the fish in a second. You know, Emmanuel, of course, like for people who've been at Totemo, they know he's known for that tuna tostada. The tuna tostada at 1111 is not quite the same because it's got the chili crisp on it. It doesn't have the caviar. You have to go to Totemo for that. But it is similar in both taste and presentation. And that has been a staple of his menu for a long time. It is incredibly delicious. Also, the quesadilla, the fried quesadilla at Totemo kind of gets reconfigured as a shrimp empanada at 11-11 with the crispy outside and the gooey cheese. You get the great cheese pull, a little bit salty, the sweetness of the shrimp, the crunch of the fried tortilla. That is a very delicious dish. The wings were maybe, I mean, they were a little small. Like, I don't know. It's not going to rank in my very, very favorite wings.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. Both that duck carnitas taco with the crispy duck skin and that ribeye taco. And that's Mexico City thing that the Michelin starred taqueria in Mexico City does that thinly sliced ribeye taco, simply dressed with the avocado. This is a very good version of it. And you're seeing it, you're seeing that ribeye taco everywhere. Barzolo is doing it. Exilio Lat Flair is doing it. It's all over the place right now. Texas Monthly, Jose Rolat wrote an article about the rise of ribeye tacos because he's seen it statewide. So this is a good version of it. And I would happily order any of those things again. But yes, talk about the sea bass because that's a bit of a flex at a bar like 11-11. To do a dish that is very famous. It is the staple of Contramar in Mexico City. And to do a version of it at a bar shows a lot of culinary skill, frankly, in my opinion.
No, absolutely. It really does show the attention that they paid to the menu by providing this, because that sea bass was cooked perfectly. It wasn't under, it wasn't over. Sometimes I feel like those dishes can get even like kind of watery, but it was perfectly flaky. And I really like the option, you know, that we have the two sides. So we have the herb rub on one side, the chili adobo on the other. And it's a great dish to split as well, which that is my one complaint about the tacos is I wish that they came maybe two to an order instead of one, just so that if you're on a date, you don't have to be awkward and be like, you and I split the tacos. And thankfully we've been doing this for a long time, so we're used to it. But
we had ordered the whole menu, right? Like,
yeah.
They basically want you to order two tacos at $16 each, which is sporty, but again, it's consistent with the environment.
Yeah, absolutely. But the sea bass is, well, and as you were saying, you know, this could be a place where you go just for drinks and a snack. But this is a full meal right here. Absolutely. With the corn tortillas and all the different accoutrements that they bring out for you to kind of build your own tacos is.
Yeah, they do a really good job, right? Because it comes with different sauces. It comes with a black bean puree. It comes with escabeche, the pickled vegetables. And it really is kind of choose your own adventure, right? Like you can just put the fish in a tortilla and it's seasoned and that's fine. You can add a little salsa, maybe brighten it up or add a little heat. You know, you can get a little creaminess if you put the black beans in. You can get a little acidity with the vegetables. And it's a substantial piece of fish. I mean, certainly it would be a hearty entree for one. And I really think it's like it fed three of us pretty comfortably.
Yeah.
Again, with some of the other stuff that with some of the other stuff that we ate, but our pescatarian dining companion who couldn't eat chicken wings or duck taco or ribeye taco was elated because she devoured that fish with us.
Yeah. And it's also nice too, because once again, if you're on a date, it's not a heavy dish. It's not something that, you know, afterwards you're going to feel like you need to take a nap, which is how, you know, some Mexican food can be, because it's so full of goodness. But this is, you know, something light so that you can enjoy it and still have your cocktails and want to continue dancing throughout the night.
Right. And about the cocktails, again, they are just as impressive as the food. It's obvious that a lot of work has gone into them. Most of them are clarified, which I don't know if that makes cocktails taste better, but it certainly makes them look prettier. what was your one or two favorite of your drinks that we had?
I would say the 11-11 margarita with its salty lime air, as I call it. It's so clarified that it looks like you're drinking water with bubbles, just foam on top of it. But it's really just a clean sip. We actually, I mentioned to you while we were drinking, I was like, I feel like so many of these drinks are actually kind of dangerous because They're not too sweet, but they also, they're just really easy to drink. So, you know, I'm just sitting there just like throwing back margaritas. And I think I had about 3 cocktails and I didn't feel gross. I didn't feel even really tipsy, which is always nice because then you get to really experience the drinks and the flavor without, you know, going home and the next day, you know, I'm 38. So waking up feeling a little nauseous with all that sugar. So,
yeah, I mean, I played around a little bit, right? I had an 11-11, the house margarita, always a good reference point. And I'm with you, right? Not too tart, not too sweet, nicely balanced. Mm-hmm. Still had that, you know, when I drink a tequila cocktail, I want that tequila flavor, that like vegetal tang of tequila to come through at the bottom of whatever I'm drinking. And I thought the margarita did a nice job of that. I thought the Paloma I had did a nice job of that. And even, you know, I was like, okay, give me the passion fruit margarita, like the most ridiculous.
Yeah.
And obviously that's going to be a little sweeter. And I didn't mind it because we were at the end of the meal and it wasn't messing with my ability to taste the food.
Yeah.
But it was beautiful and it was so tasty. And like you, I'm knocking these back like there's no alcohol in them. And then of course you go to stand up and you're like, oh, actually, yes, there was alcohol in there. You know, I need another bottle of sparkling water before I make my way back to the car to go home. So
I
have to say, you know, overall, I'm very impressed by this. I'm with you. I think it's a great date spot. And indeed, you know, as I said, I took a date there and we had a lot of fun in that environment, kind of enjoying the music and the scene. And I also think just like for people who really like, you know, if you're familiar with Emmanuel's food or if you're intimidated by the fact that Totemo is, I think, $150 for a 7-course tasting menu, mm-hmm. and you want to kind of know what the hype is about, well, you can go have the $18 guacamole or the $16 ribeye taco or 2 empanadas for, I think, 16 or 18, whatever it is, and get like some sense of what he's up to at Totemo. Mm-hmm. The experiences are consistent and maybe use that as the basis to decide like whether you want to commit to the tasting menu at Totemo, which I 100% think that you should. Mm-hmm. Right. If you're listening to this podcast and you love dining at restaurants, like you're on the team, mm-hmm. save up and go to Totemo. But at the same time, I also understand like I want to know more about what I'm committing myself to. Mm-hmm. Go to 11-11 and decide for yourself.
Yeah. And I mean, I think also for people who just really enjoy cocktails, you know, as we were saying, there's all these margaritas, but there's also, you know, a yuzu highball that was amazing. There was the mezcal ginger fizz. So I felt like there was a really good range of things for everybody, which I really appreciated too. So I think go for the food, but also make sure that you're taking the time to really look through that extensive cocktail menu.
Absolutely. All right. And then just briefly for our second restaurant of the week, I want to talk about our meal at Hidden Omakase. It's been a little over a month since we went there. Of course, since then, there was a car accident. A car drove into the dining room at Hidden Omakase. They've been closed. They just announced today, breaking news, that they are going to have a residency at Bar Moon, which is on Post Oak, so about a mile away from their regular location. So Hidden Omakase is coming back. And so, you know, Brianna, you and I have had this like kind of fun, you know, we dine all over the place and we've been to kind of high and low and everything in between, but we have done some Michelin star dining together. We've been Le Jardinier together. We've been to March together. You know, Hidden Omakase is recommended, which isn't quite the same thing, but it is that kind of elevated tasting menu style. And so what did you think of Hidden Omakase? How did it compare to some of the other like very elegant meals that we've had together?
Yeah, you know, I think what's interesting about it is that it feels rather approachable. You know, it is elevated, but I think for someone who maybe doesn't have as much experience or knowledge of this cuisine can really learn a lot because, you know, they bring out the fish, they explain to you what's in each one. You're sitting there, you can watch them put it together. So I think that's really nice. And it's also, you know, I can't say anything about what their new renovation will look like. I'm excited to see that. But, you know, the space itself was also very welcoming and pretty low key. So I'm excited to see what happens next. And I'm really excited that they're going to be at Bar Moon because I just like Bart Moon and I'm excited for more people to go there. But, you know, there were some hits and some misses, or not necessarily misses, but more like I wouldn't necessarily need to eat that again. But, you know, that also comes down to preferences. So,
yeah, I mean, I think what really sets Hidden apart is that they walk the fish into the dining room and they show you, oh, this is the tuna. This is the amberjack. This is the whatever we're slicing today. I kind of love that, you know, because you don't really think about, you know, like you don't really think about, oh, this was a fish that was swimming in the ocean, even though like intellectually we know that, but you're not, you don't think about what they look like or how they're sliced or how they're prepared. So I really like that interactive element of it. And it's a very kind of typical progression, right? Where, you know, you start with lighter stuff and then you get to slightly oilier fish and then you get some tuna and then you get a little Wagyu. It's always very delicious. Like, you know, I've been to Hidden a few times over the years and I always enjoy it. I always think that, you know, they do a really good job and of the various omakase spots. For me, sushi, nothing's going to top Sushi Horiuchi. That's such a special experience. But it's also six seats and only once a night and only on certain days. You know, Hidden is much more approachable. It's more established. So it's a lot easier to get into. It's less expensive. And you still get that very personal, very premium experience. And of course, it's BYOB, which saves you quite a bit of money if you're so inclined.
Yeah. No, that was nice because I brought us a bottle of white wine and it was nice to be able to pair that with it. But I would say that I came home and I showed my kiddos the photos of the fish that I took because I don't know if you remember, Eric, but every time they would come out, I'd be like, oh, hi. Like they're holding dead fish. I'm just like, it is really nice. It's an educational experience too. Like the shark skin flounder was just seeing that and feeling it and hearing about it and then tasting it too. It's always nice to learn where your food is from and remember that there is what the process is.
I mean, I know it's been a while since we ate there, but do you remember, do you have a favorite from our dinner at Hidden Omakase?
Yeah, I really enjoyed that hand roll that we finished with. I know that wasn't on the tasting menu, but we ordered the spicy bluefin hand roll, and that was really, really good. And then the Ora King salmon with the carrot ponzu and pesto, that was a really nice bite. I liked the kinds of different textures that you got with that one as well.
Yeah, no, those were two standouts for me. You know, I'm never going to be mad about Otoro. I'm never going to be mad about, you know, ocean trout. You know, I thought that spring terrine was really nice. So, yeah, I think this is another one of those, you know, kind of premium experiences. And I understand it's not something that everyone can afford. But if you really like sushi and you really like dining, you know, this remains a very impressive restaurant. So before we wrap this up, any final thoughts on Hidden Omakase?
You know, I just really want to encourage people to support it while it is in its second home right now at Bar Moon. You know, we really want to keep these locally owned restaurants, these special dining experiences. So let's just, you know, make our way over there. And then you can pop into Bar Moon and have a nice drink, too. That's also a very beautiful space. So
there it is. All right, Brianna McLean, I'm going to say that does it for the restaurants of the week. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guests will be Paul Rice and J.D. Davey from Recess.